This is HPR episode 2704 entitled Intro to Scribus and is part of the series Privacy and Security. It is hosted by Klaatu and is about 40 minutes long and carries a clean flag. The summary is Klaatu provides an overview of Scribus in part 1 of a miniseries about steganography.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by archive.org. Support universal access to all knowledge by heading over to archive.org/donate.
Hello folks, Kay Wisher here to remind you that it's that time of year again. Time for the Hacker Public Radio New Year's Eve show. For those who don't know, on New Year's Eve, December 31st, 2018, at 10 a.m. UTC, that is 5 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, we will have a recording going on the HPR Mumble server for anyone to come on and say Happy New Year and talk about whatever they want. We will leave the recording going until January 1st, 2019, 12 a.m. UTC, that will be 7 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, or until the conversation stops. Please visit hackerpublicradio.org to find all the details and links about how to set up the PC Mumble client, your favorite mobile app, the mobile server connection details, our Etherpad show notes, and the live audio stream if you only prefer to listen in on the lively banter. So please stop in and say hi, and maybe join in the conversation with other HPR listeners and contributors. It's always a good time.
To Hacker Public Radio. This is Klaatu, and I'm going to talk about Scribus today. Scribus is a page layout application. Page layout meaning you are, in theory, a person sitting at a desk in a big publishing house, and every day you get text files and you get graphic files in your inbox. Someone comes along and says, hey, we need you to take all of those text files and those graphic files and put them together on a page. And you think, well, why do you need a whole person to do that? Like, that doesn't seem like that big of a deal. Surely you could just open up LibreOffice and put the text in and then drop the graphics in and then send it to your printer and you'd be done. And to some degree, you'd be correct. That is definitely an option. You can open up a word processor and do all kinds of page layout in that word processor, and you may or may not end up with something that looks very pleasing and something that's printable, something that you can publish, and no one would know the difference, possibly. Quite possibly, once it's been printed on a page and sent to people, or printed to a PDF and posted online, people don't know what the heck you used to generate that document. It just doesn't matter in the end, as long as it looks pleasing to the eye and conveys the information or emotion that you're trying to evoke. That said, there are cases where you want a little bit more power over some very, very fine details. And that's the kind of stuff that you would be looking to Scribus for when you realize that your needs have gone beyond basic drag and drop, put your image here, give it some text wrap so it's not overlapping the text, and that sort of functionality that's provided by a word processor, or by really, really basic XSL from your docbook sources, or whatever you might be doing. So Scribus is handy for this. And a lot of people have expressed confusion about Scribus, but just mystification. They don't know how to begin with Scribus. It just seems overwhelming, over-complex, and confusing, and ultimately they just don't use it. So what I want to do is do a walkthrough of Scribus, and I know that it's audio only, so you might think, well, that doesn't make 100% sense to do an audio-only walkthrough of a very visual application. But I think that hearing about the workflow is just as powerful as seeing it, to be honest. Because realistically, I don't think you would need to sit down and follow through a walkthrough of it click by click. I'm less interested in telling you where buttons are or even where menu locations are, and more interested in talking about the workflow behind sitting down and doing a page layout. Because that's the part that that I think people just don't quite understand. And if the description of the workflow doesn't make sense to you, then Scribus might not be the application you think you it might not be the application you should be using, even though you think that might that it makes sense to use it. But it might be overkill for you, or it might just not mesh with the way that you think about laying information out, and that's fine. So the first screen, so Scribus, first of all, is it's cross-platform. It's pretty easy to install on pretty much anything as far as I can tell. Certainly on Linux, it's very easy, and BSD, it's very easy. And from what I see on web pages and things, it seems pretty easy for Windows and Mac as well. So you should be able to use Scribus no matter what. When you launch Scribus, you are brought to a new document window, and this is, it seems fairly self-explanatory, but there are a couple of things that you should probably be aware of. So it's asking you what size page you want to design for. That's its purpose, is to do page layout, so it needs to know what the page is going to be. You can choose a couple of different options. You can do a single page, a double-sided page, a three-fold, or a four-fold. Those are the templates that are included with Scribus. I'm going to stick with single page, but I'll just kind of note that the double-sided layout is really useful if you're designing something that you know is going to be open physically, like a book. I have a feeling that most people read, like if you're designing for a PDF, for something that you know that is going to be primarily distributed digitally, I have a feeling most people read those one up. I could be wrong, but that's just kind of my sense. Whereas double-sided pages or double-sided layout, it assumes that you are designing for something that you're going to print and that people are going to open. There's a binding, and that way you can design across two pages, two open pages. Now you might be thinking, well, how does the printer get all the pages correct? Because surely it would be confusing to know whether the right page is gonna be on the left page is gonna be on the front or the back of the left, or if it's a, you know, so where's the fold, essentially? Well, double-sided takes care of that for you, because it will ask you whether to have the first page on the right-hand side of the screen or the left-hand side of the screen. Now, if it's on the left side of the screen, then you have to assume that it's a piece of paper that you receive, that you get, and you're looking at it, and that's it, left and right. So screen left and screen right is exactly what you see if you're holding a piece of paper. But if the first page is on the right side, now you're folding the page in half, and you're looking at essentially the back side of the page, because it's been turned, it's been folded, and it's facing you. And then if you open that, now you see the left and the right, screen left, screen right. And then if you close it again, then you see the back side of the page again. So kind of, it can be confusing, but just know that the software is tracking all of that stuff for you, so don't overthink it too much. The defaults are really good. So if you're doing a page layout for physical media, for a magazine or a zine or a book that you want to have people flipping through pages and seeing exactly what you saw when you were designing it, then that would be double-sided with the first page on the right. Also important is the size and the orientation. So size, I'm setting it to A4. If you're in the US, you can do US letter, I think, somewhere in there. But A4 is what I use in New Zealand. Orientation's portrait or landscape. So portrait being sort of long side, you know, taller than it is wide. Landscape being wider than it is tall. And then there's other, again, I think self-explanatory things like number of pages. You want four pages? You want one page? I'm going to do a single page with one page. And you can do the default unit, so whatever you think in is what you can set this to. I'm going to put it in centimeters. And then there's also a setup, or an option rather, for an automatic text frame, which I'll get into why I don't do this, but you can have it generate text frames on every page for you. So it will act like a word processor, meaning that every page that you get, you can start typing in and text will appear. Believe it or not, that's not the default for Scribus. And believe it or not, it's generally not something that I activate. I don't think I've ever used automatic text frames. But if you are really into Scribus and you want to use it as a word processor, first of all, you shouldn't, but you could, then you might want to have automatic text frame. Or if you just know that you've got pages and pages and pages of text, then maybe it makes sense to have automatic text frames on. But I'll go into that more momentarily, and then maybe you'll get a sense for why that's an option. It tends to surprise people. So anyway, I've set my default unit to centimeters. Now I'm going to talk about another confusing thing, which is margins and bleeds. So margins, I guess, is, let's call it a fake concept. Margins, like there's no, a margin is just parts of the page that you have agreed not to use. That's all a margin is, right? So if you're designing something and you want to make sure that there's room on the edge of the page, then you need to set a margin, or you would want to set a margin. And you can do that with margin guides. And all that does is it draws a blue line for you to indicate, hey, your margin starts here. So anything, you know, from the center of the page, anything outside of this blue line is margin space. You can put stuff in there if you want, but you told me you didn't want to put stuff out there. So that's all the margin does. And I can see here that it's set by default, apparently, to 1.4111 centimeters. So I'll leave it at that. That's all around. Now, bleeds is a little bit, that gets a little bit more confusing, I think, for most people. So a bleed is extra paper on the sides of your paper. So it is, if you look at a piece of paper, there is no bleed there. There is, the bleed is invisible. You go off the edge of the page, and then you fall into empty space. That's the bleed area. So in your software, you can keep it at zero. You can have zero bleed, and you'll know that what you're looking at on your screen represents the exact size of your page, or the exact boundaries of the physical page that you're going to eventually print this stuff on. But if you want, and sometimes professional printers demand this, they require this, they sometimes want you to include a bleed area. And the bleed area is so that they can print on their big fancy professional printers a little bit off the sides of the page. And then when they cut those pages down to size, they are 100% guaranteed. They're very, very sure that there will be no little minuscule white border where the printer just decided that that was the end of the page. So bleeding is basically they're printing more than they need, farther out than they need to, in order for them to trim the pages down to the correct size and ensure that all the ink goes to the very, very edge of the page. That's what a bleed is. So if you, for instance, add a bleed, a 1 centimeter bleed, to your A4 page, instead of a 210 centimeter millimeter page, you're going to have from a negative 1 centimeter to 22 centimeters, which of course is not representative of an A4 page. That an A4 page should go from 0 centimeters to 21 centimeters. So that's what bleed is. It adds extra space around your page so that you can put graphics a little bit outside of the page boundary so that your printer is able to print exactly the amount of ink. You know, make sure that all the ink that you want to go to the edge of the page gets to the very, very edge of the page. One might even call it the bleeding edge of the page. Okay, so that's what margins and bleeds is. So margins are denoted by a blue box, and bleed is denoted by red. If you don't use a bleed, which is pretty common, I don't always use a bleed. It kind of depends on the use case and the printer's demands. Then the edge of your page on screen, you might detect a little bit of a red box around it, and that's why, because that's the bleed area. Okay, so once you've done that, once you've gone through those steps and configured your document, that becomes what's called a master page. And the master page is just, it's the template. It is the kind of page that whenever if you tell Scribus to create, if you realized after designing one page, you realized, oh, I needed front and back of this page. So I need another square on my screen or rectangles on my screen so I can design the other side of this page. Well, you didn't ask Scribus for two pages. You asked Scribus for one page. So now what? Well, what you do now is you can add a page to your overall layout. And the way that you would do that is you'd go to Page, Insert, and then it will ask you where you want it to insert a page. And so I would say, okay, I want one page at the end of my document. Now I could make it before the page, after the page, or at the end. So I'll just go at end, before current page, after current page, or end. And the master page is normal, because that's the only page that we've defined as the master page. Move objects with their page. Doesn't really matter because it's going at the end. And then it appends another page for me to do layout on underneath the current page. So then you've got a two-page document instead of just a one-page document. So Scribus is very much, again, not a word processor. It doesn't do things that you would normally think a word processor would do, such as give you an endless supply of paper. It doesn't assume that you want that. It assumes that you want a very specific number of pages and that you have told it that specific page number. And the reason, again, for this is because it's assuming you're going to go out to print. And if you've budgeted for a 300-page book, then the last thing you want to do is accidentally design to 301 pages or 304 or 340 and not realize that you've gone over your allotment. Whereas if you have exactly 300 pages in Scribus, then that's that you know when you've hit the end of your document. So when you're deciding to design something, whether it's a flyer or a booklet for like a technical conference, if you're on the staff of a technical conference, maybe you're doing the program guide, or maybe you're just doing a book design or something, or a game manual. Who knows what you're doing? You probably at least have text, and you probably have graphics. And if you've got either only graphics, or you've got only text, then you probably honestly don't need to be in Scribus. This is probably overkill. But the idea in Scribus is that you've got this board that represents your page, and it's up to you to fill it with stuff. And these things that you're going to fill it with are going to be constrained to boxes, to almost divs, if you think of it in HTML terms. So there are two primary types of objects that you can create, or areas that you can create in Scribus, and that's text and graphics. And you get those with little buttons at the top of Scribus. There's a toolbar up at the top, and there's a text insert text frame or insert image frame. So I'll do text first, and again, the blue lines being the boundaries for the margins, I might make a text box sort of right up against the blue line, and maybe it takes up the top half of the page. Or maybe, you know what, maybe it takes up the bottom half of the page. So I'll just kind of approximately draw this frame within the bottom portion of the page, within the margin areas, and that'll be that. And it's just a big box. Now, to type text in there, if you don't have any text, you can just double-click, and then you get a text entry marquee, and you can enter text. I think more often what Scribus really expects you to do, and I think what a lot of users actually do, is that they insert text into that frame. And you insert it from presumably a text file that your copy editor has sent to you. So to do that, you just hit Control-I for insert. And that's something that I literally don't even know. I guess you could probably right-click. Yeah, right-click and then get text. But no one, I feel like that doesn't really happen all that often. You just do Control-I for insert. And that's an old keyboard shortcut carried over from the days of Quark Express. Look that one up if you're curious. So you can insert a bunch of text from whatever source you happen to have lying around. Here's something. And then you've got text in the text box. And that's what normally people are doing, because they're expecting to be sent text. I mean, like in real life, you're sent text from your copy editor, or, you know, I say copy editor, just whoever earlier in the pipeline than you is responsible for generating the text that you are responsible for putting onto the page. Now let's say that we want to put an image into our document. And the way that you would do that, of course, is you'd click on the Insert Image Frame button, and you would draw an image frame somewhere on the page. Now, I'm going to do this to take advantage of my bleed area, because that's what really any printer would expect. So I'll just draw a box from the very, very top of the page, way beyond the red border, down about halfway. And again, it's going to expand across past the opposite side of the red box. So it's 1 centimeter taller and 2 centimeters wider than really the page area has to offer. But that's okay. That's what the bleed area is for. But it's important to remember, obviously, that means 1 centimeter of this image is going to be cut off the top, and 2 centimeters are going to be cut off the sides. Okay, so right now I've got an empty image frame. It's just this empty frame, with nothing in it. It tells me that it's an image. It's got a big X across it, so it's an image frame, but I don't know, there's no image there yet. So all we've done is we've created a placeholder, or really a bounding box. So we will right-click and get image, or just do what everyone else does and Control-I, and I'm going to grab a really, really big image. And the reason I'm doing a really, really big image is because I want to have to adjust it. So if I bring this big image in, and you'll probably notice a couple of things right away. First, you might notice that the quality of the image just doesn't seem quite what you think it ought to be. So you should know that Scribus doesn't use full quality images on purpose. It down-reses things so that it can display large documents easier for you. And all of the layout programs have this option, because the more images you have all over the place, just the slower and slower the application is obviously going to be able to respond, and that gets really, really annoying, especially when you are just a layout artist. You don't even have to worry about what the images look like. That's been taken care of previously in the pipeline. All you need to know is that this is the general sense of the image. Here's where it goes, and that's fine. You'll trust that the full quality is good. And of course, when you send it to PDF and you send it that to the printer, it's going to be using the full quality image. It's only down-resing it for internal use. So do not worry about quality. It's not showing you what you're actually going to see in terms of quality. But in layout, it's being very precise. So that's the first thing to know. Now, the second thing to know is that, well, this image is really, really big, and at least for me, it's bigger than the frame. It's bigger than the image frame that it has been put into. So I'm seeing a sliver of this image, really at the top left corner of the image is what I'm seeing. So there's a couple of different ways, and I guess it's best to mess around with this and get used to it. I'm, again, pretty used to it, so it's pretty natural for me, but it might be strange to people who aren't used to this. But certainly, think of the image frame as a little window, and the image that you have placed into it is underneath that window. So you can double-click on the image frame with an image in it, and then you can start clicking and dragging, and you can see that you can move the image around within its frame. So if you just want, maybe you actually only want some small portion of the image to be visible. Maybe that's exactly what you had intended. If that's the case, then you're good. You can move and focus in on the one small section of the image that you wanted to focus in on, and then click outside of it, and you've locked it into place. And now that's the image that you have. That's fine. Now, maybe that's not what you want, though. So there are a couple of different options to resize this image so that you're seeing what you actually intended to see. So the first way to do it, I guess, the most direct way, would be in Properties. And if you don't see a Properties floating window anywhere, then you go to Windows, go to the Windows menu, and select Properties. It's also the F2 keyboard shortcut. That brings up Properties, and there's a bunch of different tabs in properties. There's XYZ, there's shape, group, text, image, line, and colors. And in this case, as long as you have the image that you are seeking to manipulate highlighted, or selected rather, then the image tab is active. You can click on that, and you'll notice that you've got a couple of different boxes in there. One is the X position, one is the Y position, one is the X scale, Y scale, and actual DPI. So the actual DPI should be, 300 or so at least, right? If it's not, that means that, well, first of all, you can adjust it. You could say, okay, well, I really want this to be 300 dpi because I know that printing is going to at least want it to be 300 for full quality. So you can set that there, and that will reduce the image, or it'll tighten the image, if you will. And that means that you can see more of the image. You're almost zooming out of the image, or you're compressing those pixels. So that might be the problem right there. Now, if it disappears completely, then just look at the X position and Y position. Probably the X position and Y position that you want is more like 0 centimeters rather than, you know, negative 20 or whatever it might have had. It might have changed to when you altered the DPI of the image. There's also a scaling, the X scale and the Y scale, so you could adjust those values as well. And they may or may not be locked together, so you might have to change them separately, and you can click the lock to make them change together. So that's another way to manipulate the size of the image. And then if any of this sort of sets it off of what you wanted it to be, then you can double click again and kind of move it around. Or obviously you can change the X position and Y position with numbers if that's the way you want to do it. So that's kind of the most direct way to do it. Now, I might as well talk about some of the other options, because it's useful to know about the way it's good to practice anyway. So I'm going to right click and I'm going to do adjust frame to image, and that does exactly what it sounds like it's going to do. It adjusts the entire text frame so that it fits around the image, which might mean, certainly in my case, that the image is now covering the entire page, which is probably not what you want. So that's one option, adjust frame to image. Now the other option is to adjust image to frame. So if you take your frame back down, sort of shrink it back down to whatever you want, or to some other space than the entire page, then or some size other than the entire image, and then adjust image to frame, then it shrinks the image so that it fits in the frame. Now again, that might not be what you want, because maybe your image is really big, your frame's not so big, you want the image, all you want is like the top half of the image or something like that, and that's fine, you can adjust that. There are two different modes for an image frame. One, and these are both again found in the properties, in the image properties. So one is the scale to frame size, which makes it so that whatever you adjust your frame to, if the image needs to scale at all in order to keep within the bounds of the image frame, then it does. And that may be exactly what you want. And for certain images, it probably often is. Like for those kind of pop-out images that appear alongside of text, like in the margins or something, that's probably what you want to have happen. But if it's a big header image or something that's going to take up much of the page, then maybe you want exactly the sliver of that image that you need for that purpose, and so it's the frame that's more important to you. In which case, what you want is a free scaling, which again is an option there in the image properties. And that means that you can scale the image frame to whatever dimension that you want, and it'll just sort of kind of crop the image without resizing anything. It resizes the frame, not the image. So that again is free scaling for resizing the frame and not the image, or scale to frame size to scale the image along with anything that you do to the frame. And then in those modes, or in the free scaling mode, you can adjust the specifics of the image by manipulating the numbers associated with them, like the DPI or the scale factor or the position of the image, whatever it is, directly in the properties image panel. So those are the two things, really, I think, that confuse most people about Scribus right there, is just how to get text on the page and how to get graphics on the page. And that's how you do it. You draw the frame, and then you import the content. Draw the frame, import the content. Okay, so first I'll address, some people don't like all of the metadata around page layout. They don't want to necessarily see, or at least they don't want to see all the time, all the boxes and the outlines and the bounding boxes and the guides and so on. So if you're distracted by the faint, you know, the little red line showing you where the bleed is, and the gray line showing you where your text box ends, and so on, then you can turn that off momentarily, in preview mode. So if you go to view and then select preview mode, you lose all of that stuff. And it looks more or less like how it's going to look when it comes off the press out of the printer. So that's a useful thing. I don't actually use that, but it's something that I know some people say that they just can't see around all of the segmentation that kind of follows when you're looking at the document as a layout document. So that might be useful to some people. And it sometimes it is, you know, I mean, it can be useful because sometimes if you see where you get a false sense of where things end and begin, because you see the text frame ending at one point and you think, okay, well, that's pretty good. That seems like the appropriate amount of white space from the bottom of that text to the top of the next text. But what you're really judging off of are the outlines of the bounding boxes. And then you see it printed or, you know, you see it in a preview and you think, oh my gosh, that's actually a lot farther away than I realized. And it was because you were judging the distance off of not the text. So sometimes it is useful to see it in preview mode. Okay, so that's preview mode. The other thing that I wanted to address was colors. So Scribus, one of the advantages for the professional printing person is that Scribus does work in CMYK space, and you'll hear that complaint a lot about GIMP and other things, and well, really just GIMP. People say, "Oh, I can't use that. It doesn't work in CMYK." Well, that's stupid. That's not a real concern, but for some people, they say it is, and that's cool. But Scribus works in CMYK. And so when you're in Scribus, you're going to notice, certainly, that it has, like, if you're drawing a box to highlight something, or like a breakout box that you want in, you know, color in the background where text is over it or something like that, or if you're just coloring text for that matter, you're going to notice that in the colors property, in the properties pane, in the colors tab, there are all of, let's see, 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, maybe 11 colors available to you. There's like black, cyan, green, magenta, red, white, and yellow, and maybe a couple of different, couple of variations on what kind of black it is. A cool black, a warm black, a rich black, a registration. So that is a little bit confusing to a lot of people. Why are there only like 11 colors? That doesn't make any sense. Well, it makes sense because it's CMYK space, and in order for you to get Scribus to manage your colors properly, you need to be in charge of them. You need to know what colors are possible. So to do that, you can go to the Edit menu and go down to Colors, and you get a pop-up box here, dialog box called Colors. You can import colors, and that's really great if you have a bunch of color swatches that you want to import into this space, which is not uncommon in publishing. There might be a color scheme that someone has developed, you know, as legal colors for that document. So you can import that. If that doesn't exist, then you can do a new color and name the color something. I'm going to call this link blue because I'm going to use it as the color for my web links, like hyperlinks. Color model, yep, we'll keep it in CMYK. And then we'll select kind of a blue that's not too offensive, kind of a vaguely earth-tony blue. And then I'll click OK. And now in my colors, I have a new color at the bottom of the list called link blue. Now, if I go up to my text properties, then I can select any hyperlinks that I have in this document and click on the colors and color and effects drop down in my text properties. And for the little bucket here, I'm going to fill this text in with link blue. And now it is an appealing earth tony blue to set it apart sort of from the black text, but it's not overly blue so as to be offensive. That's pretty good, I think. So that's colors, and that's something that, again, tends to confuse people because they think that that any other program obviously would just give you a pop-up colors picker, and you could just choose whatever color you want whenever you want to use that color. But for Scribus, you are expected to manage your colors a little bit more carefully because they actually mean something to the printer. I think I'll probably finish it there, really. That's the basics. I mean, there are is a heck of a lot more to learn, but a lot of it is in the properties panel. Text wrap, if you've got an image that you want to plop down into the middle of something, just you'll discover all the different text wrapping possibilities in the shape panel in the properties window. Oh, actually, one more thing I should mention, because this is an unusual concept to most people. So when you're doing a multi-page document in Scribus, I don't even have to do it actually. So if you have more than one text box, let's say you've made one text frame on the left side of the page and then one on the right side of the page. So you're maybe doing a two column kind of setup, but your text does not fit into one frame. So you want the frames to be connected. You want the text to flow from one frame into the other. That's an easy fix, or that's an easy thing to set up. It's just people don't usually have to do that in a word processor, so they don't really know how to do it in Scribus. So the way that you're doing it is you select one text frame, and then you click one text frame, and then you click the button at the top of Scribus called Link Text Frames, and then you click the other frame that you want to link it to. And then if you keep typing into one text box and it overflows the frame, it'll start appearing at the top of the next frame. Now, to unlink to linked text frames, it's basically the same process except the other box, which is unlink text frames. So you click one of the linked frames, then you click the unlink text frame, unlink text frame button, and then click the one that it was linked to that you no longer want it to be linked to. And you can tell that something is not linked anymore, or you can tell that text is overflowing because there's a little red box with an X in it at the bottom, just the bottom corner of the text frame. So if you ever see that, you'll know, oh, there's text overflowing its frame. I either need to make that frame larger, or I need to come up with another text frame someplace so that that text has a place to go. And that happens fairly frequently with me, because I'm usually, when I'm using Scribus, I'm usually doing like an 8 or a 12 page document. So I still don't use that automatic text frame thing when I'm creating my new document, because I just don't believe in it. So usually what I'll do is I'll draw my first text frame, I'll import my content, and then I'll go to the next page, I'll figure out where the next frame wants to be, and then I'll put that in there. So that's something that I do frequently. And you get warnings about all of this stuff, like everything. When you go to export, file, export, save as PDF. Now, you don't have to export as PDF. It is the common output for pre-press documents. If you're going to send your thing to some professional printer for mass reproduction, then PDF is the way to go. And you can do that by export, save as PDF. Now, if for some reason the thing that you're delivering to wants something else, you can do that too. There's a save as image, save as SVG, save as EPS, save as text in some cases. So I'm just going to save as PDF here. And you have lots and lots of different options. And again, kind of knowing what your printer wants is important, because some printers will tell you, oh, just send us send us a folder of all your pages, and we will arrange them in the way that we need them to be arranged for our printer. It's called a printer spread, and it doesn't print from 1 to 8 or whatever. Let's say it's an 8-page document. It wouldn't go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. It would go, so assuming that it's being folded, it would be 1, 1, and then 8, 2, 7, and then 3, 6, I guess. And then 4 and 5, yeah, that's correct. So they print it in a different order. So if your printer needs that, then maybe they're fine with you just sending all the pages to them, and they'll print them in the order that they need. Or maybe they expect you to do that yourself. There's a couple of different ways to do it. PDF Jam is a great application to help you with that. Fonts, you need to embed fonts usually, because your printer doesn't necessarily have the fonts that you have on your computer. So you'd want to embed all of your fonts. Color intended for printer. Yeah, we need to do that. Convert spot colors to process colors. Yes, we need to do that. Use custom render settings. No, that's fine. Okay, so yeah, there's lots of different options, and communicating with the printer that you're sending it to is usually helpful. But the good thing about this whole process is that it does warn you when something's off. Like if text is overflowing and you didn't fix it, it'll tell you. If an image is not optimally sized, it will warn you. So not everything that it warns you about is fatal. Some things are truly just warnings, but it usually helps to read and see what it's telling you to make sure that you're not about to send something that is going to disappoint you when you get it back from the printer. And that's Scribus. Hopefully this has not necessarily taught you Scribus, but at least has told you or explained to you how the process goes, how this workflow is typically implemented, and it kind of maybe demystifies some of the process for you. The sample, a sample of this document is available, and I will put the link in the show notes. It'll be somewhere on slackermedia.info, which is my multimedia tutorial site. So you can download the Scribus file and the resulting PDF and take a look at both and discover a little bit about how the program works if you're curious. Thanks for listening. I'll talk to you next time.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.